I just did this NASA project. And the last minute, now it's NASA. It's a poster to celebrate Voyager 2. Voyager 1 already left the whatever sphere. And now Voyager 2 is going to go and they want to bring raise awareness. And I got to make a poster to commemorate that. Check it out.
Yeah.
We get it approved, and then we put it up on the website where everything's awesome. A little bit of a typo. It was pointing out into the universe. It actually has to point back because that's what emits the signal back to Earth.
Hey, everyone. This is David Paul, and we are in Portland, Oregon, and we are on the factory floor of the DDC studio of Mr. Aaron James Draplin. Aaron, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. I suspect there's a lot of people who may not know you and know your work as well as I am proud to. Can you give us the semi-short version of your story so people know who they're going to be listening to for the next little while?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as professional as I can be, I'm a graphic designer and I live here in Portland, Oregon. I make logos and I make little memo books and you know, work on posters and make a bunch of merchandise. I do Skillshare videos. People can come to me and they need help with their restaurant logo. I'll do that for them. You know, I used to work on a bunch of snowboarding brands, but all of that stuff, you know, there's sometimes it's more of a list. Sometimes it's less of a list. It's all from a pretty either naive or forced, kind of oblivious perspective. You know, it's sort of like, I don't want to know what else is out there. This is good enough here, you know? Yeah. And I don't want to know how much bigger it could be because this is big enough.
Well, a lot of graphic designers sit behind a desk and they just design, but that's not you. The first time I became aware of you was when you took the stage at TEDx Portland.
Oh, yeah.
Was that 2014, I think?
Yeah, I think it was 20.
And you kicked off the day, right?
Yeah.
So
they'll hire anybody.
They'll
hire anyone. I mean,
Had you been speaking much before that, or was that early in your speaking
time? There
was
about 3 or 4 years before that of where I was kind of learning how to go do it, you know? And then I remember in 2013 was like my first real tour. Where I was like, wow, let's put together 25 of these things. Yeah. I had a tour t-shirt. I had a friend do like a heavy metal cover, you know, for the front. And for the back, we had all the dates. And we sold them at all the shows, like a band or something. And it was so absurd. And just so awesome, you know, and that's a year before then. My first tour t-shirt would have been 2012, I want to say. And there was a big one for 2013. So I wasn't afraid of getting up in front of people, but that one was special because it was 3,500 people. Yeah. Up to that point, maybe I had done some 300, some 500.
Oh, so in the hundreds.
Yeah.
So this was
10X. And those are I mean, remember, if it's 100 people, that's still a lot of people looking at you.
Right.
If it's 10 people, it's still weird.
Right.
But to have 3,500 in that, like,
in your hometown,
plus people, like, when you say the bullshit I say in Nebraska, you kind of leave it in Nebraska.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there, I had buddies in the crowd.
Yeah.
And you know, without a shadow of a doubt, they're just going, oh, this piece of shit. Really? You know, they know.
Yeah.
They know me and they know. Their friends or whatever. I mean, I could hear buddies just snickering like, oh my God, you know, Draplin. That kind of like tone. I loved it because it was like I got to share it with them. And then this bigger, bigger polished crowd at large. You know, there's a lot of cool people at that thing and a lot of heavy duty people, Nikes and things and stuff.
Yeah. Did you do one of the P-Rod logos for Nike?
Yeah.
How'd that gig come together?
I had friends who were skateboarders and then got big jobs at Nike, you know, big to me. And they would call and say, hey, you know, we have this new initiative come up, a new shoe, a new product, a new thing. Have you heard of this guy? Well, I knew about his dad. He's a young kid just rips, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to put some money behind him. And I knew about his dad. But, you know, all the jokes aside, it's like, he's just this real incredible athlete
and a
really nice kid too.
Yeah, so I was going to ask. You've met him, I'm sure, right?
I don't know if I ever met him. I just heard really good things about him. Now, just before that job, I did a Janoski logo.
Did you do the one?
It's like the old timey apothecary looking.
Yeah. That's there's.
They're all over the place.
Yeah.
You take 20 kids, 3 or 4 of them have them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like. On the flip side. The first bunch of times I saw them, they were only on the feet of like skateboarders who were in the SB. And then a bunch of years went by, and the next time I saw them, they were on the feet of like a bunch of good looking jocks.
It's lifestyle shoes,
in
right?
Key West. I mean, they're cool shoes, yeah. And it's a cool cut, and there's 94 colors. It just is always very jarring to me, yeah. You know, just like, geez, you know, like so weird to me that like, that's just right here. And for my contribution, you know, I didn't design the shoe,
right.
I designed, just a little label for my couple buddies out there. So they approached me, and then I got to roll the sleeves up. And what you really see is it's not just a couple of my buddies back here knocking out a logo. There's process and hurdles to jump and presentations to make and people to sell up and up and up. And at any time it can just go away. It's happened a number of times.
Yeah.
And other times it gets pushed really fast. And it's all for the mechanism of how to sell some awesome shoes. Right, you know, I get it, you know, and people always say, well, why are you, I've had some people say to me like, well, why are you against Nike? I'm not against Nike. You know, I'm against wearing pants. I don't have to wear pants back here.
Right.
I've been to that campus. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I had Air Jordans in 1986. I was 13,
right.
You know, 12.
Right.
And I had a pair of that. Every kid aspired to that stuff. That was an awesome thing to have when you're, lucky right. to have that shit. So I know what that magic is like. You know, all these years later, it's like, here's all I can say is I have a buddy who collects every pair of Air Jordans. How many years has that been? 35, 40 years, almost 35 years.
Yeah.
He's got like, he buys two pair a year. He's got a shoe, like a closet filled with it.
Does he work there or no?
No, he lives in Italy. Wow. So when we would come here to work on Union Buy, his name is Martino Fumagalli. And Martino,
well, that's the best name ever.
Yes, my brother. Martino would come here and he'd go buy a couple pairs and load up and then take them back. And every year he'd buy a couple pairs, and that's like his little thing. And he wears a couple here and there, yeah. But he's got them all the way back.
Yeah,
that's nice. Some of them are worth a lot.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I would never say that's a weird thing.
You have a little bit of collection yourself.
I got some collection.
You know what collection's
all
about.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the idea is what frustrates me is like. Not everyone can get those Nikes. You know what I mean?
Not only are they $200, but they're also limited run.
Oh, my God. And then listen, that's all. There's an architect behind that.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's a little weird. I don't want to do that with Field Notes, or whatever we're working on. I want them to be affordable.
Your style is get it into the hand of everyone who wants it,
Well,
right?
They're $10.
So I first learned of you from that TEDx. I'd never heard of you before. I'm sitting in the audience. You come out. I was so fascinated because you just stood there and you went for 20 minutes without, I swear you didn't stop to take a breath.
Yeah, yeah.
And those slides are going. And I'm wondering, because we're all about how do you engage people? Not a moment of what you did was boring. My question is what do you think it is? Because now you speak all over the country. I'm sure you speak internationally to some degree. You're a graphic designer, not the classic presentation guy or someone who gets up on a stage, gives presentations. What is it about the way you get up on that stage and connect with that audience that resonates and makes people want to sit there and listen to you for 20 minutes, an hour, whatever it is?
Raw animal talent. I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't know.
But work into it. You don't just get up there and wing
it,
right?
It's a roller coaster.
But it doesn't look like you work that
it's
hard.
It's a roller coaster of bullshit. Because if you notice, I don't take it too seriously.
Yeah.
I make fun of myself.
Yeah.
I prop up a buddy's band. I talk about things that scare me. You know, there's a range. There's peaks and valleys. You know, here it is. Here's a cool project. It might be like the valley might be that there's no money involved.
Anything deliberate? Are you building an arc to take
people
on that
journey?
Of course.
I mean, there's ways you can do it. You can like do a crescendo or something, then you really get them like, crashing down. You know, I don't know. I mean, the thing is it's just being transparent and being loose and being like, hey, I'm just going to show you guys what I've been up to, and I hope you dig it. And then how do you – because you know what? Today we could find something funny about today. We could find something. Mm-hmm. That's what writers and,
you mean the minute we start recording when the long guy shows up?
There's going to be something that we can riff on,
yeah.
You know? And there's going to be something like, oh, I had to get the X2000, Craftsman Super Hog out. You know, whatever. We could find something to make fun of that.
Yeah.
But the same thing is like, whatever project, I will make notes along the way like, ooh, there was some folly there. I crossed some white. I just did this NASA project. And the last minute, now it's NASA. It's a poster to celebrate Voyager 2. Voyager 1 already left the whatever sphere, and now Voyager 2 is going to go, and they want to bring raise awareness, because when they raise awareness, they get more funding.
Yeah.
You know, another thing just left, the something-something sphere. These are two pieces that mankind, the heliosphere, mankind released from, you know, from our clutches of our, you know, and those things are going out in the world, and I got to make a poster to commemorate that. Check it out.
Yeah.
We get it approved, we get it approved, we get it approved, we get it approved, and then we put it up on the website where everything's awesome, and you know, we're doing laps and all, we're great, and all this kind of sashes and shit. I had the fucking thing pointed the wrong way. A little bit of a typo. It was pointing out into the universe. It actually has to point back, because that's what emits the signal back to Earth.
After all the approvals, nobody caught that?
So the idea is this. When you get up there and you say, the scientists looked at it, and they were like, actually, it looks like it's boring the other way. Maybe we should just go with that. Because, you know, if you're to get the public to, you know, no, the way it looks this way. I have it looking like this. Okay. So when you get to say, I'm working for NASA. I got to do something for you guys. Heard of NASA? I got to realize one of my dreams, and then check it out. Bit of a typo towards the end of it. And you bring them right back down, and you realize what a pile of shit that I am. And then you kind of go, but I got to work for NASA, and you bring them back to halfway.
You know, you can't feel bad about that when all the NASA people approved it. Come on.
These are the scientists that are like signing off. The guy comes back and he's like, you know, you might want to turn, you got it turned the wrong way. You know,
So you mentioned field notes. Everybody's probably seen these, but you probably don't think about what or who's behind these. So what's your contribution to field notes? What's the story?
In about 2002, or so, I got back up to Portland, and when I was in art school, 98 to 2000, I learned how to make books, and I would build my own little journals. But, you know, it was a bit of a pain in the ass, because, like, you know, when you get that little art project done, and then go beat it up, and it starts to fall apart, you know, you're kind of heartbroken, because it's like this thing. But then you go to the store, and you buy an awesome little hardbound journal, or a little memo book or something, you know, and it's like, I was just kind of whipping through them. You know?
Yeah.
And the idea that if I lost my journal with 6 months worth of stuff in it, was kind of freaking me out, because that would be like I lost 6 months of my life. Because, you know, on these pages here, I keep track of everything I'm working on. You know, I'm just sketching the family.
So you use them for real.
I mean, there's a list of what I worked on that day, you know, either getting a plane ticket or getting ready for another podcast or, well, brighter greens on the watermelon pin. There it is. You know, so I'm making lists and I'm knocking these things out, and it keeps me kind of in line. Yeah. So it's always the idea. It's like always ready to go. And if I need to go and sketch something, there it is. So to have something with, you know, 8 or 9 months of your life in it, it's kind of terrifying. Because if I left that thing on a bus or I left that thing in an airport, it'd be devastating.
Yeah.
So I went to Italy and I bought a big stack of moleskines.
Yeah.
And up to that point, I had seen Muji, but it was so hard to get.
Yeah.
You know, now when I go to that Muji store here, oh, it is such a treat. I mean, look, we got these toothbrushes right here. Like, I don't even need a toothbrush, but they were just so cool. You know, like $4 or something. Like, just get them. I started to make my own stuff, 2002, where I just, you know, build my own books, make my own bunch of memo books. And then just for myself. And then I just kind of built it out. And the first bunch I did were like 200 with a GoCo machine, little Japanese, you know,
just made it yourself in the shop.
Made it myself.
Yeah.
Cut them up, rounded the corners, did the staples, had 200 in a stack, numbered them all. And, you know, those were five and a half tall by three wide. So they were kind of like a little tall and skinny, because I had tons of old memo books from my collections from these agrarian sources, feed and seeds and haberdasheries and, like, you know, like
that's the inspiration for lumber yards. Where these came from.
I mean, you go to a lumber yard probably today and they just have one there on the thing because people need to make notes. They just flip you one.
Right.
It's a little piece of marketing. It's a little piece of advertising. So they used to give them out. So I'd been collecting those for years, but I didn't like to use them because sometimes they had a handwriting in them and I was like, someone's going to use this thing.
Right.
So I go to Italy, I get a stack of these things, I hear the story about how it's like, you know, Van Gogh used them or something.
Yeah, yeah.
We all read the little thing in there.
Right.
That was marketing. That was bullshit.
Yeah.
And I was kind of pissed because I was like, oh, I thought this was like, Moleskine was some like exotic name from all the way back to 1880.
It's like Haagen-Dazs from New Jersey, right?
They made it up. So, okay, fine. Well, that hurt. Because if you go to that lumber yard and it just says David Paul Industries, that might be totally real. It might not be big, but it's real.
Yeah.
And I'd rather have something from that. So I made field notes. It just, I just was asked yesterday, why would you call it field notes? It was like, it just sounds bigger than it is.
Yeah.
It's exactly what I'm doing. I'm sitting out drawing, you know, like when I'm around the world or at that time, just around the nation on these road trips and stuff.
Yeah.
And there was something cool about scientists who use them and actually are in the field making things. So,
right. Yeah. You just call it what it is.
That's it. Like you could even dumb it down and say memo book.
Right.
But there was something a little too cute about that or something. So I made my first bunch and then gave those out to my buddies. And then I had to go make another run because everyone wanted one. Mm. So I did 2,000 books for $2,000 right here in Portland. Mm. Gave all those out. Gave a stack to Jim Kudal. Jim Kudal in Chicago, who was like, you know, this guy was really kind of like enamored by. And
you guys knew each other?
No, but I was just a fan of his website. And then, you know.
So did you send them to him? How'd you get them to
him? Well, I reached out to him and said.
I love those origin stories.
I said, Jim, I'm from, you know, 6 hours north of Chicago, and I'm through Chicago an awful lot. Could I come by and see what you guys do? And he was like, Aaron, we know about you too. Let's meet. So I go there to meet him, and we sit and bullshit, and he's awesome, and I give him a stack of goodies like I always do with people, and I give him a stack, and he just has this look on his face of like, I mean, do you see, like, you know, like, we have something here. But do you know what you have, you know? And you want to make a company? I'm like, well, let's do it. So we shook.
So just like that.
And before I knew it, within a couple months, we've got a website. We're starting to sell things. It's getting into the hands of like Grubers and those sorts of guys. You know John Gruber?
Yeah.
That big name, you know, that Mac guy.
Yeah.
Well, when he would talk about it on his big Mac website, you know, people that are going out and buying cool shit are buying our little thing, right? It was really cool. And we start getting into these hands of these, you know, pretty interesting people. And of course, I'm giving it out to whoever I can give it out to, right. You know? And it just kind of took off. And before we knew it, we had like, you know, Michelle Seiler, who does a lot of retail, and, you know, a web person, Dawson, and like an art director, Brian Bedell, you know, like a staff in Chicago that had been working with Jim on all their projects.
Yeah.
And now we're going to be doing more and more and more field notes. And all these years later, it is just field notes. Like Jim had a raging business before he met me.
Yeah.
And I brought him this little thing, and Jim turned it into a raging business. Just on field notes.
Yeah. So let me, cool. Let me ask you what's the magic, because this is a paper notebook.
Yeah.
Right now. I mean, of course there's
detail.
There's gems and treasures. Like every time I get one, and I'm not pandering. My son who's filming right here knows I went home and I'm like, what's the one I'm going to start for this interview? And of course it's an Oregon one, but you know, there's gems in the back cover, and there's a million little facts and figures and stories. But at the end of the day, it's thick paper, with thin paper and staples. What is it that captivates people about this?
I mean, I'll tell you, these days? There's a million answers I can give. I mean, but I think the first answer I'll give just about myself is that there's still something poetic and random and warm and comfortable about a blank page of paper. Like I can just start and I can screw up and it's okay. And there's something cold kind of and almost predictable and almost kind of calculated about the way we use our phones even. And listen, I use my phone like, I mean, we've been bullshitting for a while.
Yeah.
And the idea that I haven't checked my mail since we've been talking is just embarrassing to me. But You know, I'm trained now.
And I'm the same. I mean,
I'm trained now.
I run a whole company for my phone some days.
When my phone dies, this doesn't die.
Yeah.
And the idea, this larger metaphor of slowing your life down and savoring like handwriting, drawing. You know, for me to be, you know, the other night we went to Super Deluxe, this little burger place I've been working on with some buddies. They started the damn thing, but we're at Super Deluxe eating. And I'm drawing my family, you know, like messing with my nephew. He's got a big head of hair, and a cute little guy. And there's my little almost brother-in-law's, you know, little brother. Anyway, I'm just sketching. Like, I don't get a lot of those moments. I had those moments all growing up.
Yeah.
And it's the idea of just a safe, like, it's just a space where I can be really creative.
There's a nostalgia to it.
And
plus
it works.
It's this, and it's affordable.
Try using your phone to make a grocery list. It's just not the same thing.
It's a pain in the ass.
It's not the same thing. Not the same tactile, physical quality of like a flick.
Yeah.
As like scratch.
As a designer, what's the difference for you when it's from your brain to your hand to paper versus your brain to your hand to a computer screen when you're working on something? And I know you do your finished products, of course, in the computer because you have to deliver it that way. But when you're being creative, what's the difference if you were to sit down and start a sketch from scratch on paper versus a sketch from scratch on the computer?
Quantity.
What's that experience going to be?
It's just you can get stuff done quicker. You know, you can sketch quick, you know.
Do you come up with different stuff though? Like, do you find that the end product ends up being different based on the medium that you're using?
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. They're just like little puzzles. And the idea that when I'm in Illustrator, it's architecture. And yes, there's little things that reveal themselves with geometry and, you know, stuff that you can't do on paper. But I will say, the best stuff I've made, it's on paper.
Yeah.
It's coming directly from this to this,
mm-hmm.
onto this thing. There's a direct connection. There is something about, there's a reverence for all the time it took to make the software. The only software here, it's like right here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a reverence for the machine you're sitting on. There's a reverence for the idea of this modern advancement of like power and convenience and technology and accessibility. Like, you know, that thing works every time I sit it down. It's amazing. But I have to be creative here. I can't rely on the cool tech.
Right.
And there's something that unlocks something really cool in me. Mm. I'll sit and just make a puzzle out of it. It's fun to me to sit and sketch. The thing that's stressing me out the most, I have a project right now where I kind of showed a bunch of stuff at the start and I was just a little off in my assessment of what they needed.
Mm.
And that always stings, you know. But when you go back, you look at the emails, I'm just going a little too quick and they know that I'm going fast. But I had to go back to the drawing board.
Mm.
And when I go back to the drawing board, you know, it's like, well, wait a second. Before I go and like take a look at like, you know, what could this thing be? Now, listen, just you see this shit like Nixon. The moves here are really interesting to me. The way that these two colors interact with another, you know, it's simple. Mm-hmm. It's two colors.
Yeah.
That's what this stuff becomes. It's like I go and grab these things and just pull them aside and say, okay, there's something to learn from this little thing right here. It's right here, how you can pack all that in this one little space.
Yeah.
And I see that little piece of junk, and then that goes into paper, and I start to make. Like, I mean, I'll be on the phone call getting the job,
yeah.
And I'll be sketching while we're talking.
Right.
And I have hit things in the first couple minutes of talking, and it's like, put a star next to it, and come back to that.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell him that.
I'm just like, we're just talking minutes, through right? like the kickoff. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Now, you know, and that's where it's kind of like. I get that sketch going and I can't get to that Illustrator quick enough.
Right.
So, you know, here's where freelancers are cool. When you're on the plane and everyone makes you put your laptop away or whatever your thing away. Now it was a lot harsher 4 and 5 years ago. It was like put every device away.
Right.
But I could have my field notes out.
Yeah.
And sit in like in that 20 minutes when they make you cut that off to when you land. That is this like dead person zone of like there's nothing happening, but I always took that 20 minutes to be like, all right, here's my chance. What's stressing me out? Let me get sketching.
Yeah.
And I've hit stuff in that 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like think about 20 minutes. It's only 20 minutes, you know, and it's like to be creative in that time. I can just do it on paper in such a cool way. I mean, this thing has slowed me down and made me more efficient in a lot of ways. Because the problem is with that son of a bitch is like, I get notifications going and I just want to turn the entire thing off because there's people asking why I didn't get their email from a day before. I'm going quick.
Yeah.
Now back here, there are probably 10 things going off at 3:15, clean the shop.
Well,
you see what a stellar job I did for you guys on that. Put it on my little list in my field notes.
Yeah.
And I'll catch it.
Because you can check it.
Because I'm looking. Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's like everything's getting easier and quicker and faster, and I just want to turn it off even more because it becomes flies to swat. It used to be one fly to swat. Now it's like 70.
Yeah.
And then I have to swat the whole colony or what would a gaggle of flies be called? Just a shitwack of flies?
Yeah.
Now it's like you get one email from some well-meaning producer who's like, pissed because they're waiting on another round of stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we sent you an email this morning. It's like, it was 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
That's just the culture we're in. So,
a good simple notebook.
This becomes this
good
metaphor
quality,
of how
fair
to.
Price. What's your role in every edition of Field Notes and how much of a team is involved?
Well, I mean, it really depends. I mean, frankly, with the firepower of Jim Kudal and Michelle and Brian, they knock stuff out all the time that I'm not really even involved in. And it always is weird because I'm used to touching every single character. But they're more than capable.
I mean, you guys are kicking out a lot. It's a monthly thing.
Incredible ideas. Yeah. So sometimes it might just be the logo on the cover. Other times, I'm doing everything. Yeah. Other times, it's just get us some color ideas. Yeah. Other times, it's, hey, just be ready. We've been looking at this thing from 3 feet. We want a 30,000-foot look. I need you just for one afternoon. I got you. You know, and then that's the gym just kind of letting me know. We haven't talked to you in 3 weeks, asshole. Now we need you. And then I'm ready for him, you know. Well, it's pretty cool.
I was excited. Last year, I spoke at a conference in Nashville, and the day before, there was a workshop. And I walked into the workshop, and the workshop was being hosted by a former creative director at Pixar. Oh. And he worked on all the big Pixar movies, and he was doing a half-day workshop on storytelling. And at every single person's seat was a Field Notes out of, it was a pastel edition, I think from last spring. Yeah. It was like a robin's egg blue, and it was like a chili pepper red.
Yes.
And every seat.
Those are called Sweet Tooth.
Yeah. Every seat had one. So I felt I was at home. And I loved I loved the Moon series because you got the die cut. That was.
Well, I mean,
it's a nice one.
I love the Moon series too. Yeah. You know, and they're sold out.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've got a little stash here, but it's like, I want to use the Moon book still. But
yeah, I've actually hoarded. I bought three sets
of
them
because,
and I hoarded them. Every time I use one, I got to think about it.
I want to use the new mile marker.
Yeah.
By the way, that just came out.
Oh,
I haven't seen this one. Whatever you're saying, it doesn't matter, dude. You guys, go buy some of these right now. They're $9.95 or whatever the hell the price. It's a good, fair price. Made in America. Made south of Chicago by honest, hardworking people with nice little details. Go get the map. Get these. Whatever you're saying. Okay, let's go
back.
I have allegiance to, like, I want to be the fan who's like, I better get my book done because there's new books coming. There's new books coming. But my policy is I don't get rid of these things. Like, I don't jump to the next one. Until I'm at this part in the last page. That is my
whole
policy.
Book. Last
I go,
page.
I get to the end,
and you keep them all. I'm sure, of course.
Got them all right up in there. You know, right up.
How often do you go through a book? Would you say
if I'm cooking right now, and let's see here, I'm over halfway. I'm about three quarters through, and I started this on the 28th. So where are we at? 11 or 12 days in. So that means this is going to be about a 2 week book. That means I'm busy.
Do you run about 2 a month?
I'd say about one to two a month. And then sometimes. It's once a month because I'm traveling or I'm doing stuff. But here's the deal.
But is it always on you? You always
I've never lost one.
Yeah.
I've never lost one.
It's always in your pocket or
always
your bag.
Always close. And when I leave the house, you get your phone, your wallet, your keys, and your Field Notes. Right. And then, of course, something to write.
Right.
And that is non-negotiable. When I leave the restaurant, where are my phone? Where's my key? When I'm getting on the airport, when I'm getting on the plane, I know where those things are.
Yeah.
And... you know, it's become an extension of everything I do. And here's the thing. It's like I'm from Northern Michigan, and I remember old timer, like kind of farmers, you know, they always had a big pocket of shit right here.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked for them 75 years ago.
Right.
They had tools and rulers
and,
you know, like, in a pocket protector, a memo book, maybe a handkerchief, chew, some kind of a little pocket knife, all in a one-stop shop.
In our world, corporate world, it's a lot of B2B, business-to-business kind of work. A lot of people giving sales presentations, and they're delivering reports to clients where they have to give them the outcome of, you know, it could be a $100,000 research project. Yeah. It's a big deal. But a lot of this stuff, most of it, is boring. We end up boring people to death. And my question for you, for people who are listening, who have to operate in that corporate world, and that's the life they live and the work they have to do, but how do you take a little bit of that magic that you put on the work that you do? What would be your advice to those people working corporate jobs, giving those presentations every day, to stay professional, but just find a way to make it a little bit more real, a little bit more palatable for people. How do you put a little bit of that magic on it?
I think, you know, for me to help, like my buddy who was a PhD in like some sort of endocrinologist.
Yeah. Oof.
You know, studies like lipids and things and little chemical things, you know, and skin and stuff.
Yeah.
And his culture of the PhD, these are scientists,
yeah,
of just black data on a white page.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of showed him how to like just make a call out and have a line around something and say, you can put your illustration of the covalent neutrons and whatever the fuck, you know, angle of the dangle divided by the hypotenuse, uh-huh, of the bulk. I don't know what the hell. You know,
yeah.
Okay, there. And then here's a header. And just this little bit of color, it changes the tone how you deliver the goods.
And has he done it?
He absolutely.
And what was his feedback to you?
Well, you started to see the rest of the culture around him change.
Really?
Because they started to see, like, wow, that was like kind of fun to read. It was just different.
Yeah.
You know, and like, wow, it's that same times, you know, just putting you to sleep. And it's like, that's what graphic design does. It helps communicate something a little bit better. Or it's easier to read. You know, to everyone listening right now, you got that camera in my face the whole time. Ready?
I'm ready.
Don't have sentences. Watch it, kid. Don't have sentences this long. See this right here? No sentence should be this long in your book, right? Because your eye has a hard time to go from here to here. So there's rules. And it's like two characters of, you know, of the two stretches of the alphabet, 26 characters. No line should be longer than two alphabets. That's the rule.
Yeah.
Because if you add up all those characters, if you're going 70 characters, your eye's having to travel too long.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
So the idea that this, you know, this two alphabet rule, that makes it easier how to read things.
Yeah.
So that's psychology, or just that functional, you know, that functional aspect to how you read the type, that is good design.
So let me ask, so you mentioned NASA was obviously a proud moment. Another proud moment for you is you designed a U.S. postage stamp.
Yeah.
Okay, I am dying to hear that story.
Yeah.
So how did that come to be? And let's see it and kind of talk us through how you got to that. How'd you get to that design? How much stuff did you go through? Mm. How'd you get contacted? Yeah. What was it like?
Did you
reach out to them?
No,
or did someone reach out to you?
I was afraid to, because I just thought, I'm just a drop in the bucket. You know, who am I? I'm a collector. I like these things. I play with them. I went to the stamp show this morning. But I was at a Howe conference probably 3 years ago. Howe conference in Atlanta or something, and I saw this, you know, what do you call a group of swans? That's like a flogel or something. I'm just making shit up now. But what's a group of USPS, you know, workers?
Okay.
A skinkle of workers? Okay, yeah. Great. There it is. You know, the skinkle of workers. There's a group of these ladies, and I'm like, I can read in their tags. They're buying all my shit. Whatever is it, you know, I have this big merch table. They're buying stuff up.
Oh, you're selling, yeah.
So I'm selling. I just did my presentation. I'm selling. There's a wave, a line of people buying shit. It was awesome. It always is awesome.
Nice. Yeah.
And I see on this group of girls, it's like, you guys work for the post office? What do you do for them? Like, we're at the very bottom of this thing, but we are like junior, you know, designers from something.
Yeah.
But Aaron, your name has come up a couple times for people we could reach out to. I said, well, why haven't you? And they're like, well, we thought you were too busy. You know, you're one of the keynotes here. You have a line two blocks long. You don't want to work for us. I just said, listen, put my shit in with whoever needs to get in with.
Yeah.
I'm interested. I have stuff on ice that I've been designing for years. If I got to make a stamp, I would do this, right? So that at that time, I had done these little, you know, I had done this little set of like stamp cards.
Yeah.
And it was just gang up work from a Texas poster. Mm-hmm. Right? The Texas poster is navy, red, and a kind of a medium, you know, royal blue.
Mm-hmm.
So you get these three colors. Those are the colors of America, right?
Yeah.
So I make these stamp mockups, this little postcard set, and they see those. They buy a set of those for, you know, $20 for four cards or something, mm-hmm, little mini screen prints. They take them back to someone, and then I get a call from this guy named Greg Breeding. And I'm just going to tell you right now, that phone call was a fucking Academy Award performance. You know, you get your one shot.
Yeah.
And I unloaded on that poor man and just was, you know, just about to tears. I want to make a stamp for America, because I'd seen Jessica Hish do it for America.
Yeah.
Her love stamp.
Yeah.
Always with Honor, Tyler and Elsa, friends here in town. Awesome designers. They did one. Coastal Birds, a couple years, 3 years ago. Just a little bit ago, my buddy's Invisible Creatures, Don Clark guy, did the Dragon series that it's out there. You know, the dragons.
Yeah.
So when I get this call, he's like, Aaron, I got a project. We're going to get going on this. Now, I can't talk about the couple of things that we worked on that didn't quite make the cut.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. I've already had my heart broken a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
But I told him it was okay. because, you know, something of something, you know, 7 of 8 stamps does not make the cut, right? And then people get frustrated because they work 12 months and then they say, oh, it's not going to happen. And I'm only paid this much of what we were supposed to be paid. Things change. Presidents change. Mm-hmm. Budgets change. Diseases change. Mm-hmm. Things, you know, yep, cultural yep. initiatives change. Okay. So they kind of warned me, you know, this could go away at any second. And a couple of them did. So I got paid these little fees. Fine. I kept saying shit like, I'll just give all this money to vets. Mm-hmm. I'll just give it to, like, you know, Peace Corps or something. I don't care. Yeah. You know, I just want to work for America. Mm-hmm. And then I got to do a patriotic star. And he said, what do you have? Let me see what you got. I need a patriotic, you know, star. And I got to work. And within about, you know, we kind of did some back and forth. And I just kept, I didn't know if I was supposed to go. And he finally said, I need to see some stuff. And I had him some stuff in a couple days. I think I sent him 42 options. I just went nuts. Oh, my God. 42. I want them to see that it's a couple alphabets worth just to start.
Right.
And then we go to the next 8, and we whittle down to the very perfect one.
Yeah.
So
let's see. So let's see what you ended up with.
Yeah, well, here is the what they call a star ribbon. You know, and it's this really simple piece of geometry. And, you know, they told this story about interconnectedness in America. You know,
so what does this well, design
I mean,
mean
the,
to
the
you?
Thing to me is just about the optimism of, like, America, you know. And I don't know if that means that, but that's where my heart was,
that's
you
where,
know.
That's where this design
what these
came
things,
from.
That's what these things mean to me.
So you got to put a mark on that.
To contribute to that little fabric of... Yeah,
that means a lot to you.
This it means a whole bunch, and it's just this little shitty mouse finger. It's
well, congratulations.
You know, thank you.
Well, you're doing good work. You make people happy with your work.
Thank
also,
you.
I mean, I know a lot of your work. It's, you know, it's also corporate work. You're designing, you know, logos and other graphic design, but you also put a lot of, happiness and joy out into the world. Your presentations are fun. The merchandise that you make and sell is colorful and fun and nostalgic and. As a fan, I'll tell you that you bring joy and happiness.
Well, thank
into
you.
The world.
I mean, remember a lot of stuff that's the stuff that you see. You know, what you don't see is, like, when I work on, like, you know, I don't want to say corporate, but just a professional job, I have to be very professional. Mm-hmm. You know, all the bullshit we're saying right now, that's because I kind of know you a little bit where I'm comfortable, and it's like I'm just trying to keep, you know, just trying to keep things real professional. But, well, you know, I work for a little company called rhymes with Snapple, you know, rhymes with Mapple, you know. Every night I do a little bit of moonlighting. I'm never allowed to talk about any of it anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're on the job with those guys, you don't screw around.
Yeah.
When that lady calls, you're ready to go. Yeah. And I am terrified, but I can be very professional for them. You know what I mean? Because they don't know about what we've been talking about. I'm brought in as a hired gun, and it's not really up to me to, like, have a little performance. And the performance is just how quick I can get that stuff done, do a good job, and be one of their little, you know, their little weapons. Yeah. And that's totally different than kind of what we, you know, I know how to do that is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would rather have people know me for the things you were talking about, you know, the basics, thank you, you know. And I try to keep one foot in the, like, you know, all this stuff is like, I just can't say no to these opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, if it went away, well, I saved a lot of loot the last bunch of years, just in case it ever did.
Yeah.
You know, because it could go away.
It's a smart play. It's a smart play. It's not going away anytime soon.
I hope
not.
Oh my God.
I promise.
I hope not. Well, thank you,
Aaron James Draplin. This has really been fun. Thank you for giving us not only some of your time, but part of your Saturday. We appreciate that.
It's all right.
This has been a blast.
Thank you.
All right, my friend.
Come back sometime.
We'll see you soon.